This is the Cambridge Assessment International Education, Cambridge IGCSE, March 2020 examination in English as a second language. Paper 4. Listening. Welcome to the exam. In a moment, your teacher is going to give out the question papers. When you get your paper, fill in your name, centre number and candidate number on the front page. Do not talk to anyone during the exam. If you would like the recording to be louder or quieter, tell your teacher now. The recording will not be stopped while you are doing the exam. Teacher, please give out the question papers. And when all the candidates are ready to start the test, please turn the recording back on. Now you are all ready, here is the exam. Exercise 1. You will hear 4 short recordings. Answer each question on the line provided. Write no more than 3 words for each answer. You will hear each recording twice. Question 1. A. What present does the girl usually buy for her grandmother's birthday? B. Where is the girl going to look for a present for her grandmother?
Have you bought something for your grandmother's birthday yet, Maria?
Actually, I'm having trouble deciding what to get. I was thinking about buying some chocolates for her. I'm sure she'd like that. The last few years I've given her clothes. This year I think I should try to do something different.
How about a book? You said your grandmother's always reading.
Maybe. I suppose I could look in that new bookshop, but it's the other side of town. I think I'll just walk around the shopping centre. I reckon I'll get something there.
OK. Good luck. Have you bought something for your grandmother's birthday yet, Maria?
Actually, I'm having trouble deciding what to get. I was thinking about buying some chocolates for her. I'm sure she'd like that. The last few years I've given her clothes. This year I think I should try to do something different.
How about a book? You said your grandmother's always reading.
Maybe. I suppose I could look in that new bookshop, but it's the other side of town. I think I'll just walk around the shopping centre. I reckon I'll get something there.
OK. Good luck.
Question 2. A. What does the man find most difficult about learning to drive? B. Who does the man think has helped him most with learning to drive?
How are your driving lessons going, Max?
It's fun, but challenging, to be honest. I was worried about changing gears at first, but I think I'm doing fine. And I've proved that by avoiding any problems going up hills.
So you're going to pass the test easily, then?
If I can improve my parking. That's something lots of people find hardest, and I do too.
Is your driving instructor any good?
He's quite friendly, yes. I'm really benefiting from the extra support my uncle has given me, though. He's been great. My friend recommended some online videos, but I haven't checked them out yet.
How are your driving lessons going, Max?
It's fun, but challenging, to be honest. I was worried about changing gears at first, but I think I'm doing fine. And I've proved that by avoiding any problems going up hills.
So you're going to pass the test easily, then?
If I can improve my parking. That's something lots of people find hardest, and I do too.
Is your driving instructor any good?
He's quite friendly, yes. I'm really benefiting from the extra support my uncle has given me, though. He's been great. My friend recommended some online videos, but I haven't checked them out yet.
Question 3. A. What job did Gina Foster do in the past? B. Where does Gina Foster prefer to give talks about the environment?
For my project, I'm going to tell you about a person I really admire. Gina Foster is friendly, kind, and clever. It's no surprise she's so internationally famous. It's a shame that people no longer remember her as a singer. It may be because she's trying to make it as an actor these days. She's also involved in a campaign to protect the environment. Like lots of celebrities, she gives talks about this on TV, though she said that she gets more satisfaction from speaking in schools. Occasionally, local companies invite her, and I think that's brilliant because it really raises awareness of environmental issues. For my project, I'm going to tell you about a person I really admire. Gina Foster is friendly, kind, and clever. It's no surprise she's so internationally famous. It's a shame that people no longer remember her as a singer. It may be because she's trying to make it as an actor these days. She's also involved in a campaign to protect the environment. Like lots of celebrities, she gives talks about this on TV, though she said that she gets more satisfaction from speaking in schools. Occasionally, local companies invite her, and I think that's brilliant because it really raises awareness of environmental issues.
Question 4. A. What time of day did the man go to the top of the skyscraper? B. Where on the top floor had the man planned to go?
Hi, Tony. How was your trip to the city?
Great. A highlight was going to the top of Mickelson Tower. It's a skyscraper and one of the tallest buildings in the city. Friends told me it's really impressive at night. At first, I wasn't too keen on the idea of going in the morning, but it turned out to be fantastic. I've heard it gets far too busy in the afternoon. There are some offices on the top floor, and I was hoping to get into the restaurant too. Unfortunately, it was closed. I had a look round the gift shop, but that wasn't the point of me going up the tower.
Hi, Tony. How was your trip to the city?
Great. A highlight was going to the top of Mickelson Tower. It's a skyscraper and one of the tallest buildings in the city. Friends told me it's really impressive at night. At first, I wasn't too keen on the idea of going in the morning, but it turned out to be fantastic. I've heard it gets far too busy in the afternoon. There are some offices on the top floor, and I was hoping to get into the restaurant too. Unfortunately, it was closed. I had a look round the gift shop, but that wasn't the point of me going up the tower.
That is the end of the 4 short recordings. In a moment, you will hear exercise 2. Now look at the questions for this part of the exam. Exercise 2. You will hear a talk given by a woman called Laura, who took up photography as a hobby. Listen to the talk and complete the details below. Write 1 or 2 words only in each gap. You will hear the talk twice.
I'm here to tell you about my hobby, photography. It gives me great pleasure. However, I think people can find the technical language confusing. And certainly that's how I felt when I started reading about the subject and trying to take good photos. The cost is a problem for some, but I was determined not to let that stop me, and I bought some very good equipment. I realised that I needed advice, and so I did a beginner's course at my local college, which was okay as a starting point. My camera manual helped a bit too. Anyway, I came across a blog where people gave free advice online. That's what made a big difference to me. After a while, I started taking photos outdoors. I didn't want to worry too much about the lenses I was using. even though later I understood how important they are if you're a professional. I've since learned that I should have paid more attention to checking the settings, but what I studied carefully was the light. I noticed how different it was at different times of the day, and how that affected the pictures. I got into the habit of taking pictures wherever I went. My family could understand why I went to the local park with my camera, and they didn't ask any questions when I had it at a party. They were surprised, though, when I got my camera out at the supermarket. I explained that you never know when you're going to see something that's worth photographing. I'd say that the best way to develop your skills as a photographer is simply to take hundreds of pictures. Personally, I quickly discovered that getting children to sit still is always a challenge. I didn't think I'd be successful in taking photos of natural landscapes, and I was right. I tried my best with wildlife too, but struggled. I only became really positive about my skills when I got surprisingly clear sunsets. After that, I began to believe in my ability. There are some things that excite me and make me want to pick up my camera, like when I travel to other countries, I take pictures of just about everything, and that gives me the biggest thrill. I love museums too, but photography is often forbidden. Friends and family members often want me to take pictures for them. My mum loves gardens, and so I've often taken pictures of them to please her. I believe it's quite important to be creative if you want to be a good photographer, though I knew that even before I got into photography. What I've learned is that the most important quality is to be patient, especially if you want a really good photograph. Very often, you have to wait for exactly the right moment. I love photography. I've thought about starting photography clubs, though that would be far too much work. It would be wonderful if I could set up local exhibitions one day. Don't get me wrong, though. I'm not aiming for a career as a photographer. For me personally, it's better to keep photography as a hobby.
Now you will hear the talk again.
I'm here to tell you about my hobby, photography. It gives me great pleasure. However, I think people can find the technical language confusing, and certainly that's how I felt when I started reading about the subject and trying to take good photos. The cost is a problem for some, but I was determined not to let that stop me, and I bought some very good equipment. I realised that I needed advice, and so I did a beginner's course at my local college, which was okay as a starting point. My camera manual helped a bit too. Anyway, I came across a blog where people gave free advice online. That's what made a big difference to me. After a while, I started taking photos outdoors. I didn't want to worry too much about the lenses I was using, even though later I understood how important they are if you're a professional. I've since learned that I should have paid more attention to checking the settings. But what I studied carefully was the light. I noticed how different it was at different times of the day, and how that affected the pictures. I got into the habit of taking pictures wherever I went. My family could understand why I went to the local park with my camera, and they didn't ask any questions when I had it at a party. They were surprised, though, when I got my camera out at the supermarket. I explained that you never know when you're going to see something that's worth photographing. I'd say that the best way to develop your skills as a photographer is simply to take hundreds of pictures. Personally, I quickly discovered that getting children to sit still is always a challenge. I didn't think I'd be successful in taking photos of natural landscapes, and I was right. I tried my best with wildlife too, but struggled. I only became really positive about my skills when I got surprisingly clear sunsets. After that, I began to believe in my ability. There are some things that excite me and make me want to pick up my camera. Like when I travel to other countries, I take pictures of just about everything, and that gives me the biggest thrill. I love museums too, but photography is often forbidden. Friends and family members often want me to take pictures for them. My mum loves gardens, and so I've often taken pictures of them to please her. I believe it's quite important to be creative if you want to be a good photographer, though I knew that even before I got into photography. What I've learned is that the most important quality is to be patient, especially if you want a really good photograph. Very often, you have to wait for exactly the right moment. I love photography. I've thought about starting photography clubs, though that would be far too much work. It would be wonderful if I could set up local exhibitions one day. Don't get me wrong, though. I'm not aiming for a career as a photographer. For me personally, it's better to keep photography as a hobby.
That is the end of the talk. In a moment, you will hear exercise 3. Now look at the questions for this part of the exam. Exercise 3. You will hear 6 people talking about television programs they watch regularly. For each of speakers 1 to 6, choose from the list A to G which opinion each speaker expresses. Write the letter in the appropriate box. Use each letter only once. There is one extra letter which you do not need to use. You will hear the recordings twice. Speaker 1.
My favourite programme is Space Police. Most of the actors aren't very well known, though there's one actor who's been in some top Hollywood films. It's a combination of science fiction and a detective series. That's what makes it so original. You can't really compare it to anything else. The programme's let down by the cheap special effects, but I don't watch it for things like that. The script is hilarious. And the characters make jokes all the time. I wish I could talk in such a witty way.
Speaker 2.
I enjoy the programme South Beach. I suppose it's a sort of soap opera. It's got quite a young cast, and sometimes you notice their inexperience. It's set in a small town on the coast, and I know many viewers love the background scenery, including some great beaches. But I like the dramatic stories. I never know what's going to happen next. With all these good points, I just don't get why it's not attracting more attention. It should be a show that gets talked about all the time.
Speaker 3.
Every week I watch Silver Warrior, a drama series set in the 18th century. It's historically accurate, so the dialogue sounds different to the way people speak today. It's a really exciting programme. Lots of people seem to agree because after the first series, which wasn't very popular, it's regularly attracted huge television audiences. I have to admit that the writers don't make it easy for the viewers, though. The plot is so complicated, and the actors are nothing special. At least that's what some TV critics say. and overall they're probably right.
Speaker 4.
A drama series I find entertaining is Green Valley High, which is about the lives of the students in a college. It's not so different from several other recent series set in similar locations. I don't enjoy complicated plots, and fortunately, this series is pretty straightforward. One thing that makes me laugh sometimes is the strange dialogue. I doubt that the writers listen to many college students, because most don't sound like the characters do. As for the cast, they're all young actors and they haven't been in any TV series before.
Speaker 5.
I love Time Travellers. It's not hugely popular, and I can understand why. Some people say they can't make sense of the plots, which depend too much on complicated scientific ideas. But I can follow everything that's going on without any trouble. Considering that the people making this program don't have the budget of a big Hollywood film, the special effects are quite an achievement. It has some fascinating plots, though they often seem to be copying other science fiction and fantasy series.
Speaker 6.
Every Saturday, I watch this great series about a detective. She goes all over the world solving crimes. I always look forward to seeing what exciting and exotic place she'll be in each week. It doesn't depend on spectacular special effects like some series, or on having a famous actor to attract interest. Although it's supposed to be a serious program, the dialogue is quite funny and well written. Viewers appreciated the programme from the start, and its popularity is growing all the time.
Now you will hear the six speakers again. Speaker 1.
My favourite programme is Space Police. Most of the actors aren't very well known, though there's one actor who's been in some top Hollywood films. It's a combination of science fiction and a detective series. That's what makes it so original. You can't really compare it to anything else. The program's let down by the cheap special effects, but I don't watch it for things like that. The script is hilarious, and the characters make jokes all the time. I wish I could talk in such a witty way.
Speaker 2.
I enjoy the programme South Beach. I suppose it's a sort of soap opera. It's got quite a young cast and sometimes you notice their inexperience. It's set in a small town on the coast and I know many viewers love the background scenery, including some great beaches. But I like the dramatic stories. I never know what's going to happen next. With all these good points, I just don't get why it's not attracting more attention. It should be a show that gets talked about all the time.
Speaker 3.
Every week I watch Silver Warrior, a drama series set in the 18th century. It's historically accurate, so the dialogue sounds different to the way people speak today. It's a really exciting programme. Lots of people seem to agree because after the first series, which wasn't very popular, it's regularly attracted huge television audiences. I have to admit that the writers don't make it easy for the viewers, though. The plot is so complicated. And the actors are nothing special. At least that's what some TV critics say. And overall, they're probably right.
Speaker 4.
A drama series I find entertaining is Green Valley High, which is about the lives of the students in a college. It's not so different from several other recent series set in similar locations. I don't enjoy complicated plots, and fortunately, this series is pretty straightforward. One thing that makes me laugh sometimes is the strange dialogue. I doubt that the writers listen to many college students, because most don't sound like the characters do. As for the cast, they're all young actors, and they haven't been in any TV series before.
Speaker 5.
I love time travellers. It's not hugely popular, and I can understand why. Some people say they can't make sense of the plots, which depend too much on complicated scientific ideas. But I can follow everything that's going on without any trouble. Considering that the people making this program don't have the budget of a big Hollywood film, the special effects are quite an achievement. It has some fascinating plots, though they often seem to be copying other science fiction and fantasy series.
Speaker 6.
Every Saturday, I watch this great series about a detective. She goes all over the world solving crimes. I always look forward to seeing what exciting and exotic place she'll be in each week. It doesn't depend on spectacular special effects like some series, or on having a famous actor to attract interest. Although it's supposed to be a serious programme, the dialogue is quite funny and well written. Viewers appreciated the programme from the start, and its popularity is growing all the time.
That is the end of Exercise 3. In a moment, you will hear Exercise 4. Now look at the questions for this part of the exam. Exercise 4. You will hear a student called Anna talking to Ben Hamilton, a personal trainer, about his work helping people to keep fit. Listen to the interview and look at the questions. For each question, choose the correct answer, A, B, or C, and put a tick in the appropriate box. You will hear the interview twice.
Hi, Ben. Thanks for talking to us about your job. Tell me about how you started out as a personal trainer.
Well, when I was a student, I got a part-time job helping out at a gym. I was only showing people round and working at reception, and that was it, really. I wanted to do more challenging work in the area of health and fitness, something that required more specialist knowledge, though I didn't think I needed a degree in any health-related subjects. My boss was enthusiastic about my plans, though he was surprised when I first told him.
So what's the number one requirement for a personal trainer, Ben?
People say personal trainers need to be familiar with the latest scientific research about diet and fitness, and I try to follow developments in that area. However, all that knowledge won't count for much if you don't know how to build people's confidence and offer constant encouragement. It's obvious that being able to plan carefully is useful too, though I'd rate it less highly overall.
What sort of people do you enjoy helping most?
I have clients from all sorts of different backgrounds. I don't mind too much if someone clever asks questions about what I'm doing or disagrees with me occasionally. Working with individuals who have done very little regular exercise before can sometimes be challenging, but I've learned how to deal with them. I turn down opportunities to work with athletes who need help with getting back in action after having broken a bone or something, as that's not really my area of expertise.
You have a lot of clients, don't you? That must be tough.
Well, I love being busy. and when my girlfriend suggests I take on fewer clients, I don't agree. The problem is that when I'm working hard, I can forget to take regular exercise, which isn't good, especially for a personal trainer. I make sure that I go away twice a year for a long break, which really helps me.
How do people in your life react to the fact you're a personal trainer?
Some family members and friends try to get free advice and ask me what fitness program would suit them. This can get on my nerves a bit, though I can understand why they do it. Generally, people are very interested in what I do and confess to me they aren't in good physical condition. They also appreciate the job I do and realise that helping people to get into shape is tough.
So, do your clients often give up the exercise programme you've put together for them?
Not often, but it happens. Having a personal trainer isn't cheap, but my clients don't use money as an excuse for quitting. It's more about not being determined enough to get up every morning and run round the park. Some people can't manage to do those things, even if they've got plenty of free time on their hands each day.
Can you tell us about one of your success stories?
I worked with a guy called Mike last year. Before starting with me, he'd already given up driving so that he'd have to walk more. I could see he was keen, so he was fine about giving up unhealthy food when I suggested it. What gave me so much satisfaction was seeing him run in a marathon. He said he couldn't have managed that without my help.
And finally, do you want to communicate your ideas to a bigger audience?
My friends think I should launch a website where I can talk about what I do. I wouldn't mind getting a book published, though. I want to write about some of the people I've helped. Maybe that's just a dream. We'll see. And next week, I'm appearing in a second TV documentary on keeping fit. I didn't enjoy doing it much last time, and I only talked for about a minute.
Ben, good luck with everything, and thank you for talking to us today.
Now you will hear the interview again.
Hi, Ben. Thanks for talking to us about your job. Tell me about how you started out as a personal trainer.
Well, when I was a student, I got a part-time job helping out at a gym. I was only showing people round and working at reception, and that was it, really. I wanted to do more challenging work in the area of health and fitness, something that required more specialist knowledge, though I didn't think I needed a degree in any health-related subjects. My boss was enthusiastic about my plans, though he was surprised when I first told him.
So what's the number one requirement for a personal trainer, Ben?
People say personal trainers need to be familiar with the latest scientific research about diet and fitness, and I try to follow developments in that area. However, all that knowledge won't count for much if you don't know how to build people's confidence and offer constant encouragement. It's obvious that being able to plan carefully is useful too, though I'd rate it less highly overall.
What sort of people do you enjoy helping most?
I have clients from all sorts of different backgrounds. I don't mind too much if someone clever asks questions about what I'm doing or disagrees with me occasionally. Working with individuals who have done very little regular exercise before can sometimes be challenging, but I've learned how to deal with them. I turn down opportunities to work with athletes who need help with getting back in action after having broken a bone or something, as that's not really my area of expertise.
You have a lot of clients, don't you? That must be tough.
Well, I love being busy, and when my girlfriend suggests I take on fewer clients, I don't agree. The problem is that when I'm working hard, I can forget to take regular exercise, which isn't good, especially for a personal trainer. I make sure that I go away twice a year for a long break, which really helps me.
How do people in your life react to the fact you're a personal trainer?
Some family members and friends try to get free advice and ask me what fitness program would suit them. This can get on my nerves a bit, though I can understand why they do it. Generally, people are very interested in what I do and confess to me they aren't in good physical condition. They also appreciate the job I do and realise that helping people to get into shape is tough.
So, do your clients often give up the exercise programme you've put together for them?
Not often, but it happens. Having a personal trainer isn't cheap, but my clients don't use money as an excuse for quitting. It's more about not being determined enough to get up every morning and run round the park. Some people can't manage to do those things, even if they've got plenty of free time on their hands each day.
Can you tell us about one of your success stories?
I worked with a guy called Mike last year. Before starting with me, he'd already given up driving so that he'd have to walk more. I could see he was keen, so he was fine about giving up unhealthy food when I suggested it. What gave me so much satisfaction was seeing him run in a marathon. He said he couldn't have managed that without my help.
And finally, do you want to communicate your ideas to a bigger audience?
My friends think I should launch a website where I can talk about what I do. I wouldn't mind getting a book published, though. I want to write about some of the people I've helped. Maybe that's just a dream. We'll see. And next week, I'm appearing in a second TV documentary on keeping fit. I didn't enjoy doing it much last time, and I only talked for about a minute.
Ben, good luck with everything, and thank you for talking to us today.
That is the end of the interview. In a moment, you will hear exercise 5. Now look at the questions for this part of the exam. Exercise 5, Part A. You will hear a teacher giving a talk about the Galapagos Islands. Listen to the talk and complete the sentences in Part A. Write one or two words only in each gap. You will hear the talk twice.
This morning I'm going to tell you something about one of the most interesting places in South America. The Galapagos, a group of islands 966 kilometers off the coast of Ecuador. The islands were discovered in 1535, and since then the population has always been small. For 300 years, sailors avoided the Galapagos partly because pirates used the islands as a base for their activities. Nowadays, attempts are being made to limit the number of tourists visiting the islands, though there's a research station on one of the islands where scientists work on protecting local species. Because of the unique wildlife there, the government of Ecuador made 97% of the land area of the Galapagos a national park in 1959. Some of the ocean around the islands was made into a marine reserve in 1986, which means that there are strict laws about activities such as fishing. The Galapagos Islands also received recognition from the United Nations, which made it a World Heritage Site. There are a variety of habitats on the Galapagos. Most islands consist of distinct areas. For example, there's an arid zone where conditions are generally dry. There's also what's known as the Pampa Zone, which is basically grassland. It's located at the highest point of most islands, and it's the most humid. And in the middle, there's the Transition Zone, which is warm and rich in vegetation, and is home to the famous Galapagos giant tortoises. When I visited the Galapagos last year, I was impressed by a place called Puerto Egas on the island of Santiago, which has beaches with sand that's completely black. The place is named after the owner of a salt mine, which has now been abandoned. You can still see a large saltwater lake there. And then you can walk to a volcano, which was definitely the highlight for me. It's interesting to examine the ecosystem in the Galapagos in detail. The absence of flowering plants may be noticeable to many visitors, though there are ferns and shrubs. You can also find plenty of trees. If we consider the range of vertebrates, It's worth noting there's a good variety of birds, but I was struck by how few mammals there are. In contrast, there are numerous reptiles, including lizards, but a complete lack of amphibians, such as frogs. Now, I'd like you to do some research on the wildlife there.
Now you will hear the talk again.
This morning I'm going to tell you something about one of the most interesting places in South America. The Galapagos, a group of islands 966 kilometers off the coast of Ecuador. The islands were discovered in 1535, and since then the population has always been small. For 300 years sailors avoided the Galapagos partly because pirates used the islands as a base for their activities. Nowadays, attempts are being made to limit the number of tourists visiting the islands, though there's a research station on one of the islands where scientists work on protecting local species. Because of the unique wildlife there, the government of Ecuador made 97% of the land area of the Galapagos a national park in 1959. Some of the ocean around the islands was made into a marine reserve in 1986, which means that there are strict laws about activities such as fishing. The Galapagos Islands also received recognition from the United Nations, which made it a World Heritage Site. There are a variety of habitats on the Galapagos. Most islands consist of distinct areas. For example, there's an arid zone where conditions are generally dry. There's also what's known as the Pampa Zone, which is basically grassland. It's located at the highest point of most islands, and it's the most humid. And in the middle, there's the transition zone, which is warm and rich in vegetation, and is home to the famous Galapagos giant tortoises. When I visited the Galapagos last year, I was impressed by a place called Puerto Egas on the island of Santiago, which has beaches with sand that's completely black. The place is named after the owner of a salt mine, which has now been abandoned. You can still see a large saltwater lake there, and then you can walk to a volcano, which was definitely the highlight for me. It's interesting to examine the ecosystem in the Galapagos in detail. The absence of flowering plants may be noticeable to many visitors, though there are ferns and shrubs. You can also find plenty of trees. If we consider the range of vertebrates, it's worth noting there's a good variety of birds, but I was struck by how few mammals there are. In contrast, there are numerous reptiles, including lizards, but a complete lack of amphibians, such as frogs. Now, I'd like you to do some research on the wildlife there.
Part B. Now listen to a conversation between two university students about the wildlife of the Galapagos Islands and complete the sentences in Part B. Write one or two words only in each gap. You will hear the conversation twice.
So what have you found out about the animals on the Galapagos?
Well, the animal that's most interesting is a large lizard called the sea iguana. They look fierce, though they don't have an aggressive nature. It wasn't a surprise to find they have considerable physical strength with powerful muscles. Their feeding habits are so unusual, I had to learn more. They actually swim underwater to find and eat plants known as algae, sometimes remaining in the sea for an hour at a time. No other lizard does that.
For me, the most intriguing animal is the giant tortoise. It can live for over 100 years. And it's huge. The tortoises aren't identical everywhere in the Galapagos. For example, their shell sizes differ. Of course, it depends on their age. But what I didn't expect is that location is another significant factor. So giant tortoises on one island look quite different from those on another.
The cutest animal has to be the Galapagos penguin.
Yes, it's the smallest penguin in the world.
I know. They're amazingly adaptable too. Although what they can't do without is a beach that offers shelter, and not a small amount either. The real problem is the strong sunlight, which they have to avoid staying in for extended periods.
There are some amazing places in the Galapagos, aren't there?
Yeah. These pictures of Tortuga Bay look fantastic.
I've read that it's a great place to try your best to spot sharks, which would be a top priority if I ever managed to get to the Galapagos. There are turtles in the sea, which might appeal to other tourists, and people can occasionally see them on the beach, so it requires less effort. For birdwatchers, there are opportunities to glimpse pelicans, so there's something of interest for most people visiting the bay.
It's depressing to realise that most Galapagos wildlife is endangered. It's not just climate change that's the issue, with more tropical storms and so on. And neither is it just habitat loss, which affects animals and plants almost everywhere, and not just the Galapagos.
Yeah, actually, it's all the introduced species that are really doing the damage, and are probably going to permanently change the finely balanced ecosystem.
You're right. Though look on the bright side. At least illegal hunting is under control. And when there have been oil spills, the damage has been limited thanks to rapid government action and changing ocean currents that dispersed the pollution.
Now you will hear the conversation again.
So what have you found out about the animals on the Galapagos?
Well, the animal that's most interesting is a large lizard called the sea iguana. They look fierce, though they don't have an aggressive nature. It wasn't a surprise to find they have considerable physical strength with powerful muscles. Their feeding habits are so unusual, I had to learn more. They actually swim underwater to find and eat plants known as algae, sometimes remaining in the sea for an hour at a time. No other lizard does that.
For me, the most intriguing animal is the giant tortoise. It can live for over 100 years, and it's huge. The tortoises aren't identical everywhere in the Galapagos. For example, their shell sizes differ. Of course, it depends on their age. But what I didn't expect is that location is another significant factor. So giant tortoises on one island look quite different from those on another.
The cutest animal has to be the Galapagos penguin.
Yes, it's the smallest penguin in the world.
I know. They're amazingly adaptable too. Although what they can't do without is a beach that offers shelter, and not a small amount either. The real problem is the strong sunlight, which they have to avoid staying in for extended periods.
There are some amazing places in the Galapagos, aren't there?
Yeah. These pictures of Tortuga Bay look fantastic.
I've read that it's a great place to try your best to spot sharks, which would be a top priority if I ever managed to get to the Galapagos. There are turtles in the sea, which might appeal to other tourists, and people can occasionally see them on the beach, so it requires less effort. For birdwatchers, there are opportunities to glimpse pelicans, so there's something of interest for most people visiting the bay.
It's depressing to realise that most Galapagos wildlife is endangered. It's not just climate change that's the issue, with more tropical storms and so on. And neither is it just habitat loss, which affects animals and plants almost everywhere, and not just the Galapagos.
Yeah, actually, it's all the introduced species that are really doing the damage, and are probably going to permanently change the finely balanced ecosystem.
You're right. Though look on the bright side. At least illegal hunting is under control. And when there have been oil spills, the damage has been limited thanks to rapid government action and changing ocean currents that dispersed the pollution.
That is the end of exercise 5 and of the exam. In a moment, your teacher will collect your papers. Please check that you have written your name, centre number and candidate number on the front of your question paper. Remember, you must not talk until all the papers have been collected. Teacher, please collect all the papers.